Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for Friday Morning GM with co-host Matt Ruff. Matt, how you doing?
Ken, it looks like Orioles season is turning into Ravens season, so glad we have something to talk about.
You know, it is. It's been a tough season so far. They had the good run on the West Coast, and before that for three games at home, and it looked like they might get it turned around. Then they lose two out of three, and I keep wanting to call it Oakland, but it's Sacramento or it's Ath on the schedule now. And then they come home and they lose two out of three to a very good Tigers team. The game on Wednesday night really looked great in terms of the 10-1 tight, close to the vest game most of the time. And then a big outburst in the seventh inning to put the game away. But it doesn't, it does not look good for our birds right now. And they'll face a lot of tough teams in the coming month or so.
For sure.
All right. So OTAs were over. They were declared over a day early by Harbaugh, who canceled practice for today, Thursday. We're recording this on Thursday night for distribution on Friday morning. But there are two pretty clear needs for the team coming out of the OTAs, I would say. And the first is at safety. And I've been trying to kind of talk about this as we go on a lot of the notes. But definitely not a position of tremendous depth for the Ravens right now.
Yeah, the Ardarius Washington offseason injury is a killer. And, you know, now you see Bo Braid go down with what they said was a minor ankle injury. But, and you know, unless they want to have Hamilton play the back end, which I think a lot of us are really hoping they can use him as that chess piece, the, you know, the queen on the chessboard. It seems more and more likely that he's going to be on the back end with Stark. So really hope that they either are have a nugget that they think they have on the roster that can make it work, or EDC is hitting the phones trying to figure out either a veteran or, you know, maybe a younger piece that's sitting on a practice squad somewhere that they could bring over.
Right. They've certainly given a lot of players a chance. Starks has looked solid. You know, he had a pick earlier this week, I believe, and then he's generally looked good and looked like he knows where he's supposed to be. There have been some good comments, one made by, I think it was Harbs, it might have been one of the other coaches, about Malachi Starks organizing walkthroughs in the hotel with some of the players. So that's a good thing to hear about. You know, you want to see that kind of leadership. I it's not Starks that I would have a concern for, and boy, if anything were to happen to him, would the Ravens be in a lot of trouble? It's the another split safety, and they really have tried everybody at this point. I mean, everybody they've got. So they've tried Bo Braid, and he had frankly not looked that great. Looked like a dime back last year. You know, downhill, close line of scrimmage, run defender. Definitely can give you something on special teams. Not a bad football player, but he's just not a split field back end guy. I don't think he has the good recognition for that. Sinusi Kane has also gotten trials. He's probably got the lead currently. He's definitely getting the most snaps in terms of players at OTAs who are having time. But honestly, I think they probably have to look outside the organization, even if they kind of want to bet on Kane going into the season to be their fourth guy who could play the back end. I think they need to get a third guy who can play the back end before they get to training camp.
Yeah, and like you said, if you get one injury during training camp or during the season, you're really starting to get to being in big trouble here. So it seems to me EDC is being patient with filling this need. Maybe he really wanted to see what they had in OTAs for the first couple rounds, but he also seems to be exceedingly patient on re-signing some of the good young players we have on the roster. So I'm sure he's working hard. I mean, I think he's a really good GM, but I really wouldn't be shocked to see some movement here in the safety room.
Right. They did try. They had a couple UDFAs on the 90-man roster in Igbinosin and Keandre Jackson. Mm-hmm. And I would say that each of them is getting opportunities. They're playing basically with the last unit, I would call it. They're not getting really high quality reps, but then nobody is because if Lamar Jackson's not there, you're not really getting the quarterback experience you'd like them, like the safety to get. But I would also say neither of them has really distinguished themselves. And they've been, not necessarily out of position, but not necessarily super fast either. And I'm talking about both in terms of trail speed and ability to diagnose. I really haven't seen it from either of them. I don't think either of them has jumped into the discussion. Would be no new thing for the Ravens to have a UDFA safety make the team, but it's, they've had one last year in Bo Braid. But it doesn't, it doesn't bode well that's your only choice. And I think they probably want to switch out for some other choices, as camp begins. Veteran is very possible, and a younger player also possible, as you mentioned.
Ken, do you think that over the years, one of my theories, I have no statistics to back it up, was that I feel like the Ravens in times when Lamar is not playing in OTAs or training camp, I feel like their quarterback play has been fairly poor outside of Lamar in recent years. And I've always wondered, and I know you see more of the camp, you get to see way more than any of us see, does it frequently hold back the learning of the offense and the defense to have poor quarterback play in some of these instances?
I don't know how that could not be true.
Right.
Like if you're not playing with Lamar Jackson, if it's Leary and Rush taking all the snaps, I would say, the last couple of days, I don't think Rush and Leary were absolutely terrible, but they had a good stretch in there where they just firing buckshot. Every pass is like it might be anywhere around the receiver. It seems like a lot of things are going wrong. The other thing is both of them are kind of antsy, and there may be a point of emphasis that they have to get rid of the ball quickly in the pocket, or they might blow a sack on them. And if that's the case, then that may be causing them to get into some really bad habits or some habits that wouldn't be normal if you had Lamar Jackson back there, because Lamar's going to hold the ball as long as he damn well feels like it and then make a play. And Rush and Leary both look like they want to get rid of the ball quickly. And I think that has caused some additional errors. I can't believe that it's an optimal learning experience to play defense against that. And I certainly can't believe it's an optimal learning experience to be a receiver in that situation, other than maybe you get a few more chances to go outside of your frame to make a catch. So I did see Anthony Miller make a couple good catches on Thursday, which was something nice. But generally speaking, the question is a good one. I don't see how it helps the Ravens to have all backup quarterback practice team.
Right. Yeah. Right.
All right, let's move on. Talk a little bit about cornerback, because I think that's probably the second weakest position right now. It's really bad to have these both defensive backfield position because there is interaction there. There's talk about players who could move between the positions, players like Hamilton who could play slot or play safety, players like Humphrey who could play slot or maybe play safety, and Washington who could have done that. But now they're out of a lot of those opportunities, other than they've tried to move JAD in to play a little safety. Looks like they might be terminating that experiment. And there are a couple of reasons. They've been a little bit thin at corner with Awuzie missing a couple practices. I think they've had JAD back at cornerback kind of with the ones as opposed to, another choice. But, Wiggins and JED and Humphrey would be the top three with Awuzie out. And they may have felt like, hey, we want to get a group like that together, or maybe even just give JED some time under those circumstances. But I would say that it's a very young cornerback room, and where I thought Tampa had kind of a lead on being the fourth cornerback, now I'd put Tampa, JED, Kone, and Longer Beam all in the same group. I don't think anyone's really distinguished themselves from the others enough. Tampa did have one really good day, but he's had a lot of individual plays which haven't worked out very well. And so while I think the Ravens would love for him to be the guy who steps up, and I think, frankly, they'd love anybody but JAD to step ahead of JAD simply by tenure, not because they hate JAD, but because JAD is a fourth-year player. I think that they've been so far a little bit disappointed in that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I hope JAD has a long career for sure, but his injury risk to me is so off the charts that even if you say, hey, JAD had a great camp, right? Or he had a great preseason. I don't think I've seen him play more than a handful of games strung together without going in and out of the lineup. And, you know, it's just like a pitcher that's had just too many arm injuries. You know, you feel like the other shoe's going to drop, whether that actually happens or not. And, you know, JAD has some talent, maybe doesn't always get his head around. Maybe he's kind of cut from the same cloth as Brandon Stevens a little bit, but does have some decent traits to play corner. But I mean, I think the guy really needs to play a couple 16 game seasons in a row to really refine that technique, and just hasn't been able to get it to this point.
Yeah, he doesn't have the luxury of that with the Ravens. I mean, if he's here, 2025 could easily be his last year as a Raven, since he'll be a free agent at the end of it. And because of that, the Ravens don't have a whole lot of investment in his future. So if they don't see him as a guy who's probably next up after the big three, if he's not next up after Humphrey, Wiggins, and Awuzie, then you got to immediately start asking questions if he's going to make the roster at all, because you've got a couple of young corners that you know have a 4-year runway on. You have Tampa, who you invested a lot in last year, but it's not any more than you invested in JAD. But Tampa's got 3 years left, and JAD has one. So you have to look at that through that lens, at least to start. And, you know, it's interesting. I also look at the JAD move to safety. It hasn't been a lot of snaps, by the way, but it's been a few. And I look at that as more of a move of desperation, that they're out of things they can try with JAD, so they attempted that.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're playing safety, you are going to have to come up and hit bigger players like tight ends, running backs. And I'm not sure he can hold up. You know, if he can't hold up as an outside corner, you know, I struggle to see him holding up on a full special teams role and a safety role. But like you said, I think desperate times call for desperate measures. Do you think they're in fairly decent shape on the outside with Marlon, with Wiggins, and with Awuzie? Do you think they're okay from a slot cornerback perspective?
I think they're stressed at both positions, because wherever you play Humphrey, you don't have him at the other position.
Right.
So it could be that Hamilton and Humphrey could hold down the slot perfectly well, and they'd be happy with that. But if they do that, then they have a problem at safety and they have a problem at outside corner all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to address both of those positions. And there are a couple of big names out there. Jalen Ramsey, I don't think is a reasonable prospect at his age and likely cost. But the next guy that's up on the list is Jaire Alexander. And he got released by the Packers after 7 years there. The Packers tried like hell to trade him and couldn't get it done. Yeah. So, you know, he actually came into the league with Lamar, both coming from Louisville. They practiced against each other on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. The thing I was thinking is, if there's any sort of offset language in Alexander's contract that makes him paid largely by the Packers still, and he signs for the vet minimum, I don't know how the Ravens don't get him. I don't know how they would fail to get him.
Yeah. You would think that would be a match made in heaven, right? Where just sometimes the stars align and you manage to get the right people together. I think Jaire Alexander is a really, really good cornerback talent. His durability is unbelievably poor. And, you know, if I think, you know, we always talk about value. You know, this isn't always the rah-rah football podcast, right? We're always trying to figure out how do we piece in the right value to the roster. And, you know, we look at it from that angle. I do think that if the price could be right, that this seems like something that could be a no-brainer. But with his injury history, I would really have a hard time giving too much money for someone like Alexander. And, you know, like you said, the Packers, they couldn't get rid of him. I mean, he had a pretty large cap hit. They had to cut him. So I'm really curious to see. He's definitely going to get signed somewhere. He's a heck of a talent, but I'd be curious to see what type of deal he gets. Is it mostly incentive laden? Does he want to win a championship and takes a discount to go to a place like the Ravens or the Chiefs or, you know, someplace that you think has a really good shot to do it? I know the Ravens have a decent amount of cap space right now, but the Ravens have pushed so much cap into future years with void years and all that stuff. You know, just because they have some cap available to use doesn't mean they're in that great of a long-term cap position and you can just blow all your dollars. So would want to be judicious with Alexander, but would certainly be intrigued in seeing that our secondary definitely could use a piece or two at the minimum.
Right. I mean, Alexander at a vet min is kind of a no-brainer to me. And he's played 4, 16, 7, and 7 games the last four seasons. He is approximately good for half a season, you know, on an expected basis, maybe. And the nice thing about his career is that he's had 70 passes defense in 78 career games. And that's not really dropped up regardless of how many games he played. He's been very similar in terms of his ball production in those. It's only 12 interceptions. It's a lot of PDs, but you know, cornerbacks don't get as many interceptions as safeties do. And he's been a, you know, a very good man coverage corner. And he's a guy who can play the back end and cover three, read the quarterback and come down and get the ball. I mean, he's a fairly, you know, useful player in multiple ways. He might even be a guy who could move to safety if you really want to make use of reading the quarterback and whatnot. I don't think I would do that. I think Alexander at his age would probably want to continue to play safety for a while, corner for a while, I should say. But, you know, the quality of play is there. He's ideal for an incentive contract because if you pay him, you know, $2 million or $1 to $2 million for half a season, you're not going to be upset. And if you pay $3 to $5 million for a full season, you're probably not going to be upset either. And if you structure the contract that way, then hey, you're all set. The other thing I'd say is I really dislike the notion of signing a player from outside the organization to a long-term deal at this point, like a 3-year deal that is the emphasis is on how can they push money into the void years and such. I'd be very opposed to that. They've got their own players. They need to get done on exactly that basis. And that's, you know, the talent that they're considering re-signing right now is the talent that was among the best rosters in the National Football League in the last 40 years, each of the last two seasons. So the first concern has to be get those guys done. If Jaire Alexander is signed for a single year on a prove it deal, that's fine. You want to sign him for, you know, $2, $3, $4 million for 1 year. I trust the Ravens to find the right price on that and not blow too much of their total available cap dollars with the longer term deals, which have much longer implications in terms of paying for them later. And even Odell Beckham was a 1-year deal where they obviously had a lot of void money and they kicked the can down the road. I'm not looking for any sort of contract with like that with any player, but I'm looking for cheap bargain situations that'll solve either you know, a backup to a backup slot corner role or a safety role. Those are basically the areas. And Jaire Alexander is actually, he's better than that because he gives you outside corner versatility. And that would be exciting.
Yeah. I think with Alexander, the pitch is pretty simple, right? He gets the Lamar pitch. He gets the fact that the Ravens are a good championship caliber team. He gets that the Ravens are going to be on prime time, right? You're going to be playing relevant games at the end of the year. I think the real pitch is, hey, you know, you've missed a lot of games over the last few years. We're not bringing you in to be the number one corner. We're not bringing you in to be the number two corner. We've got Marlon Humphrey. We've got Nate Wiggins. We've got Chidobe Awuzie. We have players. We can rotate you. And, you know, you talk about the fresh legs offense. Corner is a position where guys get dinged up very frequently. So if you, you know, if you have a tight hamstring, you don't have to go 55, 65 snaps today. right? We'll rotate you in, right? If you tweak your shoulder, we don't need you in there on rundowns banging in there, right? We can deactivate you for a week or two, right? And let you heal up. So, you know, I think that because there is some decent talent in the secondary, especially once you add Starks and Hamilton to that list, maybe being a little bit more of a rotational piece where you don't have to bear all the pressure and say, look, let me go in, let me put 16 games on film again, even if I'm only playing 40 to 60% of the snaps. And, you know, let me prove that I can stay healthy for a year again. Let me try to win a championship and maybe see if I can get one more deal before I, you know, my clock kind of ticks too far. So I think that's probably the pitch to him is, hey, this is a good team. We don't need you to play every snap. Come on in and you know, play with Lamar and let's see if we can win this thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be, you know, a good situation for him. I don't think there's a reason why he couldn't beat out Awuzie for a starting spot, for example. And Awuzie would all of a sudden drop to being the number four corner. I think it would make a lot of sense. I think it's the right amount of depth to have on a really championship caliber roster that you would have one more corner than the Ravens do currently. Mm-hmm. And it's the Washington injury is having a big ripple impact across multiple positions. And it even goes into the linebacker core, because now there's questions about how do you get a dime defense on the field with the current set of safeties. You could do it, you know, maybe Sanusi Kane is your dime. Maybe you bring him in and you keep Hamilton on the back end, or maybe Bo Brady is healthy again, then you put him back there. But I mean, just so many positions were impacted by the loss of Washington in terms of how the Ravens deploy their players.
Yeah. And the fact that it was before the season even began, right? It just gives you so much less wiggle room. It's not week eight, right? And you're getting to the end of the season. There's a lot of injuries that are still to happen. And, you know, the scary thing is that you and I have talked through this frequently. There's not that many great safety candidates on the market. There's some names that people know that are fairly recognizable. But as soon as you start looking at their yards per target, right, you're immediately scared off by it. So, you know, you might hear a name like Isaiah Simmons who's the Simmons that was in Atlanta that was on the Bengals beforehand. Justin Simmons, right? Or Blackman, who was on the Colts. Yep. You start looking at the details behind their play, and you really get scared pretty quickly, especially after, you know, what we had to witness last year. So, figured out.
The yards per target really should have told the story on Eddie Jackson, because he'd been terrible for four years. But it is what it is. Hopefully the Ravens have learned from their lesson, and we'll see if they dig in there. Usually I think the Ravens do have kind of a fairly, I won't call it a cavalier attitude. Maybe it's a certain evaluator arrogance that they think they can find the traits that they can make somebody into a good system with the structure that they have. You know, right. We have Chuck Pagano. We have excellent coaching. Our system has worked, you know, last year. Look at the way we created all these coverage sacks for a pretty average pass rushing unit. And it's not that the stuff is untrue. It's just that it's very hard to duplicate with just any player. Mm-hmm. And the more examples the Ravens pile up of guys who are completely beating the odds to be good, like Ronald Darby. I mean, Ronald Darby's, his season with the Ravens, completely out of context with the rest of his career.
Completely. Yeah, Kyle Van Noy.
Yeah, Kyle Van Noy too has been, you know, his career with Jadeveon Clowney, but I'm really talking about the coverage guys. A lot of guys have had career years with the Ravens defense. You know, Patrick Queen when Roquan was here, it'd be another example. I mean, I hope that they don't fall into the trap that they think they can make anybody good because they think they can have a reduced role. It's kind of like a failed racing mentality. So I know a few people in the horse racing business, and they probably tell you different stories about this, but they own horses, and the horses have a class that they run at that basically controls the level of competition. So if you run in a $2,000, what's called a claiming race, you can do that, and you can run for the purse in that race. But the problem is anybody else before the race can just put a slip of paper in a box and buy that horse away from you for $2,000. That's what a $2,000 claiming race means. So it keeps away the horses that you think are too good from running in too low a class. And there, you know, I think that's part of the fallacy here, is that any safety the Ravens bring in, they're going to be bringing him into a situation which is much better than what he was in before. And they think, yeah, we can fix that. We can, you know, I can see certain things on tape I really like about this guy. But sometimes you can't always fix it. You know, the guy's messed up in the head, like it appears that Eddie Jackson was. And when I say messed up in the head, let me be clear. I think he thought he knew how to play the position and he didn't really want to be told or buy into what Orr was telling him. I think that was basically the problem. And they didn't have a strong enough secondary coach like Pagano to turn that around, even if that would have done it. Okay. And so you end up in a situation where Williams and Jackson, either together or individually, are acting like idiots and causing the whole defense to collapse over the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm with you, Ken. I mean, I think when Eddie Jackson was signed, I immediately thought, oh, what are they doing? Right. And then I'm like, okay, well, I'm just your classic Baltimore on office worker. Maybe I don't know anything. But I did know, I was like, man, Eddie Jackson's gotten eaten up for what I thought was 2 years. You look into the details, I was like, kind of like 4 years, not two, yep. You know, and at some point in time, you know, I think evaluator arrogance is a great term for it, where you're like, hey, we've got the system. We can bring this guy in here. But that couldn't have been further from the truth. I mean, there are some plays that Eddie Jackson looked so poor on, you know, it just didn't even look NFL caliber. But They definitely need another piece. It doesn't need to be a major piece. You don't need to spend $8 or $10 million on it. But
breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
They definitely need another piece in that secondary. And like you said, the outside cornerbacks impact the inside, the safeties impact the inside and the outside. So, you know, they really need to figure out what's the piece that's going to fit in the best. And then luckily they do have some versatile players that they can maybe move around that piece. So if you can get a good outside cornerback, that's typically the best place to start. Right. And then you can have other things fall in place based off that.
I agree. That's the hardest thing to find. It's harder even than a split field safety, as hard as that's been for the Ravens to get outside, you know, right-sized cornerback, or they're very hard to find. All right, let's move on. Another topic, and you brought this up in terms of why don't you introduce the topic in terms of the inverted signings?
Yeah, so the Ravens have been, you know, Ken, you and I have talked on this show frequently about, there are a lot of deals that the Ravens need to get done. There's a lot of premium talent. Like you said, this is one of the best rosters that the NFL's seen. And there's a lot of talent on this roster that needs to get paid. And the way that, you know, I was thinking about it is, what is your priority and who are you going to sign first, knowing that you have a limited number of cap dollars and you want to make sure that maybe your guy is Travis Jones, for example. Or can you lock him up first before you move on to some of the other pieces? And one of the items that Ken and I had been discussing back and forth was, it's pretty interesting that they decided to extend Derrick Henry, who was already under contract for this year, and, oh, by the way, is over 30 years old and plays running back. They decided to extend Bateman when he was already under contract. And so you have some of these deals that, you think, you know, Derrick Henry and Rashad Bateman, that wasn't on my list of priorities for the offseason. You think, okay, EDC has a lot of priorities to get to. And every time the Ravens keep extending a player, I've been surprised with the last two as to, you know, hey, we've just extended a player that we already had signed that was already on a pretty good deal that I didn't really feel like we needed to throw too much cap dollars to. So it almost seems like there is a group of players who have been easier to work with, negotiate, and extend, and probably people who are in a less position of strength, like an older running back or, you know, the second wide receiver on the Baltimore Ravens. But that leads to how do you view some of these signings of players on this roster or extensions that we need to make? And what do you think is the most valuable signings, and what are the least valuable signings? And so, Ken, you want to continue talking through the exercise here?
Okay, great setup for the thing, and really interesting topic that's worth discussing on this show. But the Bateman one was a little bit out of left field in terms of it happening. I figured it had a good chance to happen next year, that he's potentially a holdout next year. But this year I didn't expect a contract to be done. And the type of contract and the value the Ravens got, I think it's good. It's outstanding value, by the way, for Bateman.
Yes.
But I think it kicks the can down the road on a holdout, but it better kick it down to the earliest holdout that should occur would be about 2028. That's his second to last season under this revised deal, which runs through 2029. So, I hope if it does the job until then I think the contract has been good enough, and they'll decide, I guess, at that point. Bateman may demand a trade. Obviously Bateman had received some, go ahead from the Ravens to search out his own trade value, but it's still a little surprising that deal got done. I like the deal. I think it's a good value for the Ravens. I'm surprised it was the first one.
Yeah, I'm surprised as well. I'm also surprised with the Derrick Henry signing. It was for a lot of money. I know that Saquon got a ton of money. The Saquon extension seemed out of this world, insane to me. Again, the cap keeps going up, and I always live my brain's always living in last year's cap. And as someone who's just conservative financially and fiscally, I'm a CPA. That's kind of how my brain works. So I struggle to move my brain as the cap increases. But yeah, I think the Bateman signing, I have no issue with it. I'm happy they extended him. I just think it's kind of odd when there's a very finite amount of cap dollars, especially when you look at the amount of void years that they're using. I mean, they're even using void years for players like, I'm pretty sure Nelson Agholor had some void money in his deal.
Tylan Wallace has some.
Tylan Wallace has a couple shekels worth. So for a team that's really, as EDC said, digging under the couch cushions for nickels and spare change, it's interesting to throw so much money at that running back and second wide receiver position. So I'm hoping that there's a lot more to come with some of these players we're gonna get into here. But I'm a little concerned that they haven't knocked one of the big dominoes off the table. I think the big dominoes would be Hamilton, likely Owe, Linderbaum, and Travis Jones. Those are the big ones. That's the big five. Obviously, you do have others like Andrews would be a part of it. Charlie Kolar might be a part of it. Ardarius Washington could. Daniel Fatlele could be. But I wouldn't consider them in the big five right there, kind of in that tier two or even tier three. Although, Josh Oliver got so much money from the Vikings, maybe Charlie Kolar doesn't think he's tier three, right? But
right. I tell you what I did, Matt. I put a B or C letter. I don't want to get any finer than that. But there's the guys they need to get at this year, and it's okay. That A, B, or C is who are the most important guys to sign this offseason as opposed to sometime later. And there could be multiple reasons why you can wait on somebody else, and there could also be some players who they may not be able to get them no matter what. So anyway, we'll start by going through the list with Hamilton. If you see, is he an A, a B, or a C priority to sign this offseason?
I would say he is a B, in my opinion. You can wait until 2026, but my fear is he is going to be getting more and more expensive. And for these market setting deals, the longer you wait to pay, the more you pay. And it's always proven to me every time I see someone sign the next market setting deal, you always think, why couldn't I have just done this earlier? I mean, you even see it with some of the quarterback contracts where it doesn't matter how good or bad the quarterback is. It's the last quarterback plus $500,000 a year, right? I mean, it's literally that asinine how the league works. So when it comes to Hamilton, I can't put him as an A, absolutely must re-sign now because we have more time and you could use the franchise tag on him after the fifth year option. So you have a little bit of leeway. I'm just worried if you push the Hamilton deal a year out or a year plus out using the franchise tag, that you might be paying $24 or $25 million for a safety. And that's terrifying. I'd rather lock something in maybe around 21 or 22 if I could now. What do you think, Ken?
I'm right there with you. And I think you hit on all the important points there in terms of what the optionality the club has, their ability to wait, but then obviously the huge potential. I can't see, because I can't detect how far out it is, exactly the size of that tsunami that's about to hit the Ravens in terms of the cost that will come in the Hamilton deal. But I think earlier is better. I have it as a B also. Let's move on and talk about Isaiah Likely. And he's a guy who could have the franchise tag in 2026. I'll tell you, I started with a B on him.
Yeah, I'm sitting right at a B as well, because we have that franchise tag ability. I think he's similar to the Hamilton situation, which there, you know, that you see like Trey McBride for Arizona just signed a pretty big deal. Every deal is going to get bigger and bigger. The longer you wait with Likely, the more he's going to cost. I think that he is a really good player. I don't know how much, you know, you would use the phrase divisible benefit would be on the table that he would see and want to see. I know these players are getting a lot of different insurances on themselves and their injuries and such, so that maybe they're less likely to immediately jump and take a deal. But the more targets that Likely gets, and I think he's going to get more this year, he's only going to get more expensive. I do think that I don't think tight end is necessarily a premium position. So maybe that would shift me to being maybe a C plus to a B on the we need to get it done soon scale. On the flip side, you're losing Likely, you're losing Andrews, you're losing Kolar and Ricard all in the same offseason. So it almost null and voids everything I just said, right? Where, you know, that's a different tsunami of that's a one position group getting completely wiped out. And, you know, they don't even have Kadir Ishmael on the roster anymore, you know? So they're really lacking past this year. I do think that Andrews might be a little bit of the, I wouldn't call it a trump card, but maybe a safety valve there, where I don't know if Andrews is going to want to go anywhere. You know, he's played here. He's played with Lamar. He might want a 2 or 3 year extension at something reasonable, and we have to let Likely go. Well, what are your thoughts on Likely, Ken?
Yeah, I you hit on all the important points there. That basically the biggest reason to sign Likely now is that all the tight ends have their contract stacked. It's not that you can't deal with it in 2026 in terms of the franchise tag, which is relatively inexpensive at tight end. I think, you know, there is some signaling that goes on. If either one of Andrews or Likely signs a deal, it probably means the other one is gone. And I can see a situation where the Ravens don't want to enter this year with that circumstance. And I can also see a situation where the Ravens go to both of them and they say, hey, look, we want to make each of you what we think is a market value offer for an extension on your services here. There might be some divisible benefit because you're still under contract for a year, but basically this is where we think you are market value. And the offer is going to be lower for Andrews than it is for Likely. Mm-hmm. And they're both going to have an offer and they may say, I don't know if I want to take that or not. Or they might look at, you know, negotiate individually and cut it off because they know the two of them are such good friends that they don't want them talking about the contract and getting it done. So they may just say, okay, you know, we're starting discussions with you, Mark, and we're gonna have a discussion and we want it to be fruitful, but I've only got about 10 days to do this. So here's my number. If you want to come back with a different number you think is the right number, we're willing to listen. We're willing to talk terms with you, but we've got to go through this quickly because we're going to Isaiah next in terms of this thing. And, you know, I've made the point before that on the draft, they just offer 10 different pitchers a graded set of contracts, and whoever accepts first, they're there, and the other people, the offers get withdrawn.
Yeah, you would have to think that Andrews is one of the players who would be willing to sacrifice money to stay with the Ravens because he's earned a lot of money in his career. He likes playing with Lamar. They have a very similar style. He's not going to be hurting for bread or water in the future. And he can really build a decent legacy with the Ravens, especially if he brings home a championship. So I don't know if going to, just jumping to, the Arizona Cardinals or the Chicago Bears to get an extra $1.5 million a year over 2 or 3 years is really that much of a needle mover at Mark's point in his career. Whereas for Likely, you might be looking at 5 years, $85 million, right? Versus the Ravens might say, hey, we can do 4 for $60 million or 4 for $55 million or something where, going to the Bears might get you a lot of extra coin. So maybe it makes it more likely that it's Andrews who gets extended over Isaiah in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. We got to move on here. We talked about kind of both Andrews and Likely. I have Andrews as a C signing, and part of the reason I think he's a C is that you signal to Likely that he's probably out if you sign him. So I think you'd actually probably try and avoid an Andrews signing this offseason. But it could be they try both and they may know already they can't sign Likely. And if they can't do that, then Kolar and Andrews both become more significant signings to get done this year.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Adafe Owe is the next one, kind of an enigma here on the fifth year option. So the signing of him right now is one of the big ways that they can actually generate additional 2025 cap space if they wanted to, because he's making a big hunk, like $14 million or something this year. But they could sign him and it would be very expensive to do so, but still it would be a lower cap number in 25. I have a problem with the higher cap numbers in the future if the money is not right. I'm not looking to get a highly leveraged, he's a $6 million cap hit this year, grading up to a $28 million cap hit 3 years from now. I'm not looking for some kind of contract like that. I'd be looking for a way to make the money work for both sides.
Yeah, I think that I would say that if you want OA long-term, signing him now is probably what you have to do. I think I'm ultimately okay if Owe moves on. I do think that if you lose Owe, there's a good chance you could get a third or a fourth round comp pick, but that is a year delayed. So it's not as valuable as getting something in the immediate future. It's hard to see with all the pieces that they've paid and all the investments that they've made on the defense. It's just hard to see them having the money for Owe. I was happy to see that he put on a little bit of weight. He said he felt like he didn't play well in the Buffalo game and he got pushed around a little bit. I always thought he's looked a little small, and I think he has a very strong and twitchy frame that he could probably carry a little bit more weight and still be okay. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him go out there and, get a couple of cleanup sacks and hit 8, 9, 10, or 11 sacks again and be completely out of the Ravens' wheelhouse from a price perspective. So I think if you want to sign him, it's an A. You absolutely got to do it now, because I don't think there's any way you're going to sign him after this season. But I still don't think it's very likely that you sign him either which way.
Right. If they don't, they do have options. If Green ends up being as good as he could be, and he might be a even better pass rusher than Owe, then you probably are moving on from Van Noy, and you'll look at another veteran, bring him in to play the other side. You increase the role of Tavius Robinson. They have ways. This Isaac could develop some more that they can get pass rushing out of what they have right now, plus their incredible talent at going to the well of veterans. But Owe, his talents are not to be understated in terms of what he's done. He's been a really good pressure guy for the Ravens, and it'd be a shame to lose him. It's just I don't know if they're going to be able to afford him. It just seems like I'm already almost resigned to that fact.
Right.
Okay, got to move on here. Falele, the reason I like him, I had put him as a B. He's a potential very cheap signing. So if you've got a way to sign him 3 years, $14 million maybe right now, 3 years, maybe that's even too low. Maybe 3 years, $16-17 million is really more like the right number. I think that could be potentially a very good deal. It'd certainly be a very good deal if he plays like he did the last five games of the year, but you got to really believe in it, and you got to be able to work with his limitations.
Yeah, Falele is an interesting character. I would say he's a B for me as well. I'm not sure if the Ravens really have the ability to spend much more on players that aren't really at the top end of the roster, because they do have a lot of top end players between him and even Linderbaum. I'm just not sure if the guard or the center position is worth massive investment. I would probably be more comfortable if it was 3 for 9 or 3 for 10, 10.5. I just don't think that gets it done, because we've seen a lot of mediocre guards getting paid pretty well.
Simpson.
Simpson. I mean, you know, Simpson was, he was holding on the way to signing his new contract. Right. So if I'm Falele, I don't think I'm signing a deal. It's that simple, because if I can just put mediocre guard tape up, I'm going to be a free agent and I'm probably going to be able to sign somewhere. There's a lot of money in the league. There's a lot of bad teams, and this is probably my only chance to cash in. And it's going to be enough cash where if you're making Fa'alele money, $1.5 million a year is really material, right? As opposed to someone like Andrews.
Yeah. I think it's the Ardarius Washington situation that would make Fa'alele want to sign early. It's the fact that in his case, he could get hurt or he could regress in terms of his play. Either one of those things could happen. And if either did, then he's basically worth almost nothing. And Ben Cleveland, we thought he was going to have significant value potentially coming out of year four, because we thought, you know, it was a pretty good chance that he'd have a starting role last year. Never materialized. And, you just don't know how it's going to play out. And you can be in a purgatory of 1 year prove it years that can last more than 1 year. And there's a few players who've been on the Ravens recently, and I put Brent Urban among them, who really understand that in terms of they didn't really cash in on what could have been a really good career because they got hurt at just the wrong time. So it's it kind of bums you out. All right, let's get to the last two here, because these are the biggest: Tyler Linderbaum and Travis Jones. Tyler Linderbaum, to me, they're both A's in terms of needing to re-sign them. And as much as I think Jones is probably the more important player of the two to re-sign, and I'll give my reasons for that in a moment, they're both critical and they're both ahead of these other people. And it's now or never, probably, for both of them. Travis Jones, just tremendously critical and central to the Ravens' pass rush. We could go on for so long on that. I don't need to, and I don't think I need to rehash stuff that we've said on this show a number of times. Linderbaum, I think I don't want to undervalue the leadership of the line. I also don't want to pay him more than Creed Humphrey's making. And right now the contracts are discontinuous among these various centers. And so one of the contracts is the outlier that doesn't mean anything, either Cam Jurgens or Creed Humphrey's. And if Creed Humphrey's is the one that doesn't mean anything, well, then you're having to pay Linderbaum $20 million a year. And I think we have to say goodbye. If it's Cam Jurgens that is truly the outlier, which I believe to be the truth, then you sign Linderbaum for $16 million for 4 years, and you've got a player that you want to lead your offensive line.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp, Ken. I think I might be a little bit more against signing Linderbaum than you, but like you said, he's the leader of the line. He's been here for a while. I think he's a really good player. I feel like the center position, unless you have just a complete brick shit house at center like Creed Humphrey, I really struggle to see how I'm going to pay 16 or 17 or 18 million for it. I don't think that 14 million gets it done. I don't think 14 and a half gets it done. I don't think 15 gets it done at this point. And I'm just worried that it's a bridge too far to get him. So if that's the case, then my mind goes to, how do you get value for him? Like, I was almost considering, do you try to trade him before or during this past draft that we had to capitalize on some value, because some other team's going to offer him more than the Ravens can. The Ravens, I don't think they can break the bank for a above average, but not elite center. And I think someone else can do that who has serious line problems, which makes me think this is pretty much guaranteed to be his last deal or last year as a Raven. And you can't franchise tag him, right? Because it's like the average of all the offensive line. You're not going to franchise tag him. It was the same issue with the fifth year option. So I guess they have to really like him. We really like him. He's a really good player. But I think that there's probably not that much more sand in the hourglass here based off a lot of those factors.
Yeah, I think basically they have to sign him before the season starts, or any sort of divisible benefit, any sort of, you know, value for the team probably starts to go away, because as risk comes off the table for Linderbaum, then he's not incented to sign a, you know, sign a deal with the Ravens at any kind of amount that maybe doesn't even set the new record. So this is really sad, because Linderbaum is a player you'd like to have it, but Voss was really angry with the pick. I didn't like it either, honestly, but Voss was more angry with me at bringing in a center with the first round pick, and you lose all the market frictions in that fifth year, all the things that keep guys around for long term. You lose all of that. We have it with Hamilton, and we're enjoying it. We not only do we have a fifth year of Hamilton, we have a potential sixth year with the franchise tag. So it's a bummer.
Yeah, I think that if you're a team that thinks your offensive line coaching is worth its salt, that you should be able to find centers not in the first round and not have a poor offensive line, right?
Yeah.
Unless, again, it's Creed Humphrey or it's Nick Mangold or, you know, one of the
Creed Humphrey was a second round pick.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, I don't want to criticize the pick too much, but I think I feel the same way that you do, which is that first round, it just really limits the value of what you can do there. And, you know, you just there. I think they're going to lose him. And that brings us to Travis Jones. And I think that they've really got to. I really hope they're trying to work through the finer points of a deal here with Jones, because he's key. He's really key to the pass rush. He's key to that defensive line. He's still improving. You know, he came from Connecticut, so, you know, he didn't have NFL coaching. He didn't have Alabama coaching, Ohio State coaching. So, you know, he's been growing each year, and I'm hoping that because he's a defensive tackle that, you know, he doesn't require the money that, you know, some of these top end pass rushers and such would,
or even that Linderbaum would need.
Right. What do you think would be a reasonable deal for Jones?
You know, I'd love to think that they could get it done this off season for, you know, 10, 11, 12 million per year. That may be unrealistic, but I'd love to see if they could get a divisible benefit deal done right now that adds years to the contract. Basically that kind of a number. And I think that would be what I'd be looking for. And very central to the Ravens pass rush. Matt, always a pleasure talking football with you. It's great to do Friday Morning GM. Tell folks where they can talk to you online.
Yeah, you can talk to me online at KidRock20.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. Appreciate any kind of promotion of the show you do. Like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Write us a five-star, 50-word review, if you don't mind taking a moment or two, on whatever your favorite podcast platform is. Matt, thanks again.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.